my intention is really simply to see how we can be more fluid and effective in the world and be supported by the incredible breadth of this NVC process. So what I value about the gift of NVC is the way that it really gave my ideals and my dreams a sort of grounding. NVC has been a resource to bring my values to life in the day-to-day living, as we talked about, just that I become a certain way in the world that I feel comfortable with. Because I'm certainly aware of the difference between just knowing NVC intellectually and, you know, going quickly through the model and then letting it manifest in the way that I walk in the world. You know, for me, it's been a very difficult journey, the 18 inches from the head to the heart. And I'm sure it's one that is going to take me a lifetime to really have a sense that I'm progressing rather than the one step forward, two steps back, that I really settle in the heart. So what I hope is to offer just a taste of what it's like to be deeply connected with the life moving through us. And when I say that, that's how I've learned to define needs. It's just simply life moving through us. They're not things that we have to grab for in the external world. It's just being connected with what's real and alive and authentic for us. And then once we're connected, to get a taste of that and how we can move from that place. It's a place of authenticity and aliveness. This particular class series comes out of an experience that I had while I was studying with Marshall. I can still remember the freedom and relief that I felt when Marshall was up in front of the room and he said, "There's no such thing as NVC. NVC does not exist." And as soon as we call it something, we lose touch with the whole intention of this work, which is to stay connected to a life energy moving through ourselves and the other. And for some reason, that resonated so deeply with me. He went on to explain that this work is simply a map. It's not the territory. And what a grave mistake that we make thinking the map is the territory. It's tragic to think that we'd miss out on experiencing life directly and thinking that the map was all it was about. We were seeking the map and we finally arrived because we finally found NVC. Marshall then tried to describe what this map that we call NVC consists of. And he said, well, it's not a communication tool, and it's not a set of techniques, and it's not a new language, and it's not a philosophy or religion. And that's the problem that we have trying to market this work, is it's hard to say what it is. And he said, rather, what NVC for him is, his understanding of it, is that it's an integration of a certain kind of consciousness or intention, which is the whole motivation behind any of the mechanics around it. So it's the integration of that consciousness and intention with a certain kind of language, because language is the software for our thoughts, shapes our thoughts. And it's an integration of the way we think. So we want to explore our thinking patterns and our thoughts, our core beliefs that we hold about the world. And it is an integration of communication that lies behind the words, the energy, the choices that we make, the way our message is sent. And it's also an integration of the strategies of influence that we might choose to really manifest our values and dreams in the world. How do we influence others in alignment with our values to really help them join us in this path of creating the kind of world that we want to? Hearing that really opened up NVC to the degree of the breadth and depth that I had experienced it personally. It had been so powerful for me, and yet how could this little simple model be so powerful and help me understand? Well, it's this huge integration of all the parts of our being. And when we're integrating NVC into the world, the world is not stagnant. It's really full of life, of living dynamic systems that are continually changing and regenerating. And when we have all of these different elements and components balanced, then life seems to flow pretty well. And so what I'd like to explore in this class is how all the interrelated arenas that Marshall was talking about, how we can keep them in balance and really become fully aware of the power that each one of them holds. So I want to check in and see if that is something that you're eager to dive into.
This is Mary Kay, and it's exactly what I was looking for. I'm particularly interested in the language you used for discussing strategies of influence, because I really do not want to be manipulative, and yet I'm a former teacher. I really want to teach. I want to share a way of looking at the world that has been very liberating for me without being manipulative or forcing it or demeaning where people are at in any way. And yet I do want to influence others.
My first thought that went flying through my mind was, oh, no, that's what she wants, and I wasn't planning it till week 5.
I'm hoping that through the 4 weeks, be ready for it.
Actually, the second thought that flew through my mind was how incredibly integrated they are, because what's crucial to strategies of influence, the most crucial piece of that is what we're talking about today, that I really want to dive into, is the consciousness that we come from. That will shape every strategy of influence. And that whole idea, the consciousness that we have power with people rather than power over people.
Yes.
And when we see how interdependent our needs are and our well-being and safety are so connected, then we can't come from a place of manipulation anymore, I don't think. So it's really settling fully into that consciousness that then will allow the strategies of influence to hold everybody's well-being in mind, so that it no longer is about domination or getting what I want at somebody else's expense. That's just my quick answer. How do you feel when you hear that? Is there some relief there?
I'm pretty sure I'm going to end up in a really good spot.
I was just appreciating as you were talking, well, I don't want to be manipulative. I really want to share this work in a way. And I thought that having that intention is probably the key to choosing a strategy of influence that will meet everybody's needs. So like you are already there. If I'm going to call this consciousness, language, thinking, communication, strategy, influence all kind of fundamental elements, because they talk about the basic components of NVC being observation, feeling, need, request. I had to come up with my own language here. So I'm going to call them fundamental elements. It seems to me that when I get to a place where I think that I'm stuck in any of my day-to-day events, it seems as though one of these elements is out of balance. So either I've lost touch with the consciousness, or I'm not connected to the request and the strategies of influence that I can use to create the world I want to live in. Often I find that my thinking prevents me from seeing possibilities. So when I go through my list and check which element's out of balance, I might really, oh, my thinking, so I might spend more time getting to the bottom of what are my core beliefs. And each element seems so crucial. That's why I'd really like to spend a full week on each one and just diving into all the gifts and possibilities. Today we could spend a lot of time on consciousness or intention, and Marshall calls this the spirituality. He uses that term. He's considered it the spirituality of the work, but now he's using it much more openly than he ever did before. Whatever word works for you, use consciousness, the spirituality, the intention. But it's truly the heart and core of the NVC. It's exploring the consciousness of our interdependence, our compassion, our partnership, and how that shapes our worldview and our speech and our actions. And out of the five elements, this is one that is truly most important. The other ones don't really have a special order to them, but this one is primary because it is the motivation behind all of the mechanics. I could tell you've all experienced that place where the mechanics are used without the intention behind it, and then it becomes that kind of stilted place, inauthentic place. So the consciousness, I would guess when you experience it as kind of stilted and mechanical, it's because this element is out of balance here. Without the consciousness of our interdependence and the realization of how inextricably entwined our needs are, then the other components of NVC don't support the movement toward that caring for all of humanity. And it's actually maybe used to harm life in some way. And that may be part of your experience too, when you've seen the mechanic used in a way that it manipulates people, that it can actually support the very system that we're trying to shift away from without the consciousness. And in NVC consciousness, we define needs as life moving through us, something that's vital and it's crucial to our very existence. And it's something that every person on the planet shares regardless of their age, gender, or cultural background. Needs are just life reaching out to life. And there's an assumption that each person's doing the best that he or she can in each moment to meet needs. so that all actions and speech are in service to needs. There's always a valid, important motivation behind every action and word. This understanding or consciousness then becomes our guide, our map through that daily territory of work and decisions. So it's at this point that I really want to slow down and explore the implications of this. Because each one of those pieces would change the way that I operated. So if I just really had the consciousness that each person's doing the best they can in every moment, I'm sure I would react differently than I often do. And I'm just beginning to grasp what it might mean if the world were truly interrelated and how my life might be different if I lived from that awareness. So I get glimpses of it, particularly recently, the last year, when I read about quantum physics and organizational changes that are happening globally, people who are working with organizational change. The paradigm shift is so huge for me, even to think that, you know, particles of matter that were once connected in some way and now are separated by time and distance across the universe, that they still respond to each other simultaneously. I don't know if you've heard of Bell's theorem that suggests when one particle that had been connected to another particle changes its spin, the other one changes the direction of its spin simultaneously. That's mind-blowing to me, to think that particles are so connected and interconnected. And then what could that possibly mean for humans who have been connected? What kind of interdependence do we have that we're not even aware of? How is it possible that we can act as if we're not connected and believe that we're separate individuals? So all of those questions are really playing with my paradigm in a rather disorienting way at times. Einstein spoke of the optical delusion out of consciousness, whereby we experience ourselves as something separate from the rest. And he said our task must be to widen our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole nature of its beauty. And the physicist Bohm, he said the basic problem we have is fragmentation. It's a way of thinking that consists of false division, making a division where there is tight connection, and of seeing separateness where there's wholeness. Bohm called fragmentation, in our view of the universe and of ourselves as separate from one another and nature, the hidden source of the social, political, and environmental crises facing the world. There's a book that I've recently read I just love. I'll share it with you. It's called Presence. And the subtitle is An Exploration of Profound Change in People, Organizations, and Society. And it's written by four different authors who've come together to talk about things. Peter Senge, he works a lot in businesses and organizational change internationally, as well as does Otto Scharmer and Joseph Jaworski and Betty Sue Flowers. And what they talk about, I'll read a quote from their book. In short, the fundamental insight of 20th century physics has yet to penetrate the social world. Relationships are more fundamental than things. At all levels of life, from the metabolic networks inside cells to the food webs of ecosystems and the networks of communications in human societies, the components of living systems are interlinked in network fashion. The extent of our interrelatedness of nature may be far greater than almost anyone might have imagined. I put all of this out there just because I think the consciousness of NVC comes from that awareness of that deep, unfathomable awareness of how life is all interdependent in ways that I've never known before. And the way that awareness shows up in attempts to create the quality of connection that leads to all needs being equally valued and met through natural giving, it manifests in a knowing that my needs can never be met at the expense of anyone else's. And the only way to meet needs for anyone is to meet them for everyone. So Marshall gave an example of that kind of depth of awareness that knows that his need for hunger can never be met if there's a single person on the planet who is starving. This is radical consciousness for me, really life-altering. And it requires and manifests in my life when I'm in the mode of NVC consciousness is that I really stand firm and hold a place where all needs can be equally valued. And I assume that we're all part of life and we're one with life in a way that the separation is just an illusion. So that's my understanding, as I'm just barely beginning to grasp what kind of consciousness that we could possibly come from. So I really would love at this point to open up the dialogue now and just hear how you feel from just listening to what I've said, and maybe I lost you long ago, I don't know. There's so many words there. And just, I would love to hear what experiences, questions come up for you, what happened in your life, contributions that you can make to this whole awareness of our interdependence and interrelatedness.
Well, this is Angana. I think everything you said, I had this little, you know, burst of, oh, wow, that it corroborates what I would hope, what I've always thought on an intellectual level, maybe on a separate spiritual level, and would hope for and always look for examples of. And so you gave so many examples, from, you know, quantum physics to this really intriguing new book on presence, and it just corroborates everything that I would hope that that's the case, that we are all interconnected, that we are interrelated, that it's a neat feeling to have that sense corroborated. And then I think what comes up is, now it's my turn kind of a thing, and so what do I do with this? Look at the power we do have to contribute and influence and manifest that kind of relationship and honor it. It opened up a lot of anticipation and hope.
Mm-hmm. So a place of hopefulness, and it's resonating with the kind of longing you feel. And I was just kept waiting for the and. I'm frustrated because I don't see it happen very much. Is that part of it too?
Yeah, on a practical level. It's like, you know, you have to grab onto those corroborations when you find them.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be nice if you could see it every day?
Yeah. And I also heard that question in your voice of, how do I access that kind of power within myself and bring it up more frequently?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. That's my question too. And I just love this, you know, all the points that the times when I've tapped into that, whether it's been doing NBC work with somebody and you just, that moment where you know that you're so connected to that person and that you've got to get through this together, then I find that reading brings me back to that place frequently and touching back into as much as I can so I can just begin to go further and further down that journey. And so I want to keep this question in the forefront for all of us as we go throughout the weeks is, I know what I'm hoping for, and how do I do that on the daily level? Thank you for that feedback of yours. Go ahead, Kathy.
I resonated with a lot of what Angana says about the recognition that I've heard these concepts intellectually, I get them, I believe them, I understand them at that level, but then how to make that transformation. Particularly what resonated with me in what you were saying was, how do I meet my own needs but not at the expense of someone else's needs?
Mm-hmm.
How do I enter into it, keeping that space that everyone's needs can be equally met? It's just not a paradigm that I've spent 50 years in. Not
yeah.
Where that shift just happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At least not for me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what really resonated with me, is that that's what I'm longing for. Not even so much at this point looking at the big picture of how rarely I get to see that, but looking at how rarely I see that in myself.
Mm-hmm.
And wanting to sort of start there.
Yeah. Now that resonates with me so much, because I noticed when I started reading quantum physics, I realized that I had no concept of the way that the world works like that. My concept was that it was separate, it was cause and effect, it was old, you know, things are solid instead of empty space. And so I was really operating out of an old paradigm and intellectually wanting something different. As both of you have said, that there's this kind of intellectual awareness. And the point where it's starting to shift for me is when I'm really seeing that the way I thought the world was is not true. that what happened to me if I really believed, you know, what science is finding is that the interrelation between particles and energy space, and there are very few particles in the energy space. What if that were really true? I mean, that's what they're saying is true. There's a whole shift for me, and it goes from an intellectual understanding to a, for me, this is where the shift is happening, into this body knowing. Oh, I have a different way of being in the world because I was living in this pretend space. And that's happening on a relational level with people. Is the more experiences I have of connecting, that sense of really being connected, that we're so interdependent, gets me to that space of to meet my needs, but not at the expense of others because it's a good idea, to making a shift between it's actually impossible for me to meet my needs at the expense of others. That's where the deeper shift happens for me, from that kind of intellectual, it's a good idea, to it's actually not possible. When I get that kind of awareness, it puts a different level of urgency on it, or meaning on it for me. Does that resonate at all with you, Kathy?
It does. It's actually quite beautiful, and I had this, that's what I want, that's what I want. Is that cellular shift.
Mm-hmm.
That I really, it's more than getting it, it's knowing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely resonates with me a lot. And many, many years ago, had read Gary Zukav's Dancing Woolly Masters.
Mm-hmm.
And with, I mean, my sister's a nuclear physicist, and I'm calling her going, what does this sentence mean? What does this, I don't understand this. And yet that was the layman's book.
Oh, yeah.
So as I hear you talking about this and recommending a book, definitely have my attention.
I don't know what else to say. Just my experience is that when I realized this sudden in my face, oh, my God, this is not even close to being accurate in terms of the way that I've been looking at the world. That's kind of what got my attention. And I can't even begin to grasp, as you said, you know, I pick up some of these books and don't have a clue what they're talking about because it's so foreign. Right. But I know it's the direction I want to go. If I can even hold on to the simple, I don't know why our safety is connected, but I just know. I don't have the clarity of why we're connected, but I just am going to act as if I totally trust that concept. Then I find that I come from a different place.
When you were talking about what if I really believed, mm-hmm. and a little while ago you had mentioned our core beliefs. What if I shifted my core belief to a world of solidity and separateness? What if I shifted my core belief?
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of, I guess, what it feels like for me.
Yeah. And here's where these fundamental elements that Marshall talked about are all interdependent, because if my consciousness is the interdependence and partnership paradigm, then my thinking... And we'll spend a whole week on core beliefs and how do we shift core beliefs and what are the ones we hold about the world that we're not even aware of. Then, you know, you can't kind of have one without the other. If I find that there's some kind of consciousness that resonates and I'm experiencing, but it seems so different, then what beliefs am I holding and looking at that might be preventing me from staying in that consciousness? You can see where I'm going with this, in circles.
Right.
They're all connected.
I got it. And I love listening. But you don't have to spend the whole hour on it.
No, but I'm just talking in circles here.
I was following.
Yeah. Good. Mary Kay, how about you?
Yeah, this is Mary Kay. I guess a couple of things. I'm fascinated listening to you talk about this. I've had paradigm shifts in consciousness. So I understand what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that came up for me listening to the discussion was Eric Erickson's Childhood and Society, where he studied different Native American tribes, one which was actually on the West Coast, and I've forgotten the name of the group, and the other was the Lakota, the Sioux, in the Midwest, where I lived for several years. I lived on a reservation in South Dakota. The study was the West Coast tribe were a fishing tribe, and they believed in a world of scarcity. And they had essentially a very capitalistic social structure where you had to bargain for everything, including your medical care, from the medicine person.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lakota lived in a world of plenty.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always enough. And generosity is one of the four main virtues.
Mm-hmm.
And the differences in personality and ways of behaving in those two almost opposite kinds of cultures. And I'm realizing that the paradigm that you are talking about, the my needs cannot be met unless every need is met, that works fine if we trust that there's enough for all of us,
mm-hmm.
if we really believe that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I am finding, you know, as I go to practice groups where I have this intention, is that we grew up in the other kind of world, a world of scarcity. The capitalist, I only am going to get mine at somebody else's expense. There's only one last piece of pie. And if I don't get it, I'm not going to have the last piece of pie.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else is going to have it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess one of the things I've been coming up with is, all right, how do I live this out? How do I bring this awareness of plenty to this table that I'm sitting at with these other people, to this practice group or you know, whoever I'm with? And I guess as I'm listening to you, I'm realizing that the answer is in this consciousness, the consciousness of plenty, the consciousness that we all have the same needs, mm-hmm. that there really isn't a problem here. Never has mm-hmm. been.
Mm-hmm.
And learning to speak that.
Yeah.
I still haven't quite figured out how to get this out of the mouth when it's needed.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm thinking that's one of the things that I'm reaching for in this class.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hear people talking, I see the path. I see how we can go underneath deeply into the needs and get in the river and get the fish. I need to learn how to touch the fish or something, or catch them or whatever.
Well, I love this that you brought up. It's just, it so touches, I think, the heart of what we run into and what really prevents us. Because we are talking about a consciousness that's so different than the paradigm and consciousness out of which we grew up with and our culture operates. And the only thing that comes up for me in my experience, and the only thing that can come to mind, is like on the how-to piece of this, how do I live this consciousness and bring it to the table, especially when there's another one that's saying just the opposite coming toward me, I can't think of anything but empathy.
Yes.
For the other person or myself. And even in the moment of when I'm starting to feel the scarcity and feel the concern, because when I get stressed, that's the point where I go back to my old paradigm. And it's really at that point, speaking the honesty piece and the empathy piece of, I'm falling into this place where I'm thinking there's not enough to go around for all of us. There's not enough time for all of us to get our needs met here. And I'm really wanting to come from a different place right now, believing that if we just sat here long enough, we could find a way. And are you willing to sit here with me and explore that? Would be the honesty piece. And the empathy piece might be if somebody says, well, you just got to grab for whatever you can get in the world, is really giving empathy for what it's been like for them to have grown up with that experience, that their needs haven't been cared for, acknowledged, or met in other ways, and that they've often had to fend for themselves and get what they could. I think we need an incredible amount of empathy around that in our culture.
The person I'm speaking to may not always have gotten what they needed.
No.
And may, in fact, not be getting it right now. And I just realized, well, the need, you know, I could actually see, I was remembering a conversation I had at a practice group with a person. And I remembered what Marshall said, don't listen to what they think. I get along better with people when I don't hear what they think.
Yeah.
And I thought, yes, just see the need,
mm-hmm.
the need for the core needs, the need, mm-hmm. the deep needs for acceptance and the need to be okay and be received as okay, that to respond to that rather than to whatever the particular thought or statement was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I love that reminder. That's the key piece we talk about all the time in MVC work, is the need consciousness, that my attention is just put on that life moving through me, that we share that same need. And I had another question for all of you, that I would be curious just to find out what resources you go to again and again to kind of keep yourselves in that consciousness of our interdependence.
This is Kath. I have a Buddhist Vipassana meditation practice and a yoga practice, and that definitely helps to quiet me. If I move away from those practices, I get very busy and I get very noisy, and that definitely creates separation for me. So the more committed I can be to my practices and the quieter I can stay, the more open I am to that awareness, that interconnectedness. And then I also happen to live in a really beautiful outdoorsy place, and getting into the mountains and by the streams and bears and mountain lions and all that stuff.
Fabulous. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And it's
so your connection with nature is probably really deep. You just see that connected life, being part of that wholeness there.
I do, and it's a fascinating dichotomy in Salt Lake City, because I live downtown. I also can look up and suddenly find a moose in my front yard. So it's almost hard to explain Salt Lake City. It's so connected to nature while still being a city. The mountains are part of the city, and it's pretty amazing. And it really does remind you, you know, of the snow falls and then the snow melts and runs down the mountain, and that's our water. And if you go camping in the mountains, you might get eaten by a bear. It's not even a vacation. It's just what you do on the weekend. So there is this really profound connectedness to the nature all around. Some of it's still in its rawness and wildness.
But what listening to you brings up for me is that awareness that you hold of the points of connection that you have, whether they're connection to the spiritual practices of stillness and quietness, and how that opens you up to an awareness of something much broader and bigger than ourselves. Really being aware is that attention, that, and just acknowledgement that you place on that, that would seem a key piece of keeping the consciousness present. Thank you.
Yeah, so what, with regard to what we've been talking about, I've just been thinking about the fact that growing up, I would, thinking back on how, what my attitude was as a young child and a young person, is probably a lot kind of Pollyanna-ish. Everybody's wonderful and there's so much good in the world and, you know, just Pollyanna. And I know the inner critic voice that comes up around that is my mom's, who still to this day will every now and then say, you know, the world is a cruel place and you have to be careful and you have to not trust so easily and you have to be aware that people don't all have the good, warm-hearted intentions that you do. And this is the perspective that I came from, is that inner battle. This concept of interrelatedness, all our needs are the same, everybody's doing the best they can, everybody's got a good reason for what they're doing, trying to empathize, trying to understand people's point of views, is the way I naturally want. And so that's been the battle for me. It's all the typical hurts, teachers not being the wonderful people that I thought they were, maybe having conflicts with them or having conflicts with school friends, having conflicts with schoolmates, people not living up to agreements, and all those kinds of things that happen in life, which would all bear out my mom's perception there. It seems like I went through a stage in my 20s where I lost touch with that natural feeling of interconnectedness. I'm thinking about how stressful that was, really my 30s, that decade of my 30s. A lot of stresses and a lot of tension and everything. And so discovering NVC kind of gave me permission to think and act in a way that feels right and feels natural and comfortable for me. So that's kind of what came up for me. For me, just kind of remembering that I have thought this way before and I enjoy looking at the world from this type of perspective, it holds me up. I can keep myself from falling into the pattern of society's or other people's habitual thought. I can keep myself aware and be able to respond in the empathic way that I'd like to. It's almost like you could do that. You can do that if you want. That is an option. It's a valid option, and you can exercise it. That's what came up for me.
I love that. I'm really inspired to just that reminder that this is our natural state. I mean, not only reality it is, but there are times in our life when we've really been settled into that natural state of awareness of that, rather than this big paradigm shift that we have to do. So thank you for that reminder. I really appreciate that. There's something innate and really at our core there.
And this is Mary Kay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to, as one Pollyanna to another, I want to give you permission to do that. I think that's the first time I've heard someone else in my life mention that, but I have been accused of being a Pollyanna since I was very young, and I still am occasionally. But I consider a Pollyanna to be a very highly evolved being. So, and you know what I was thinking of when you said, you know, what do you do for yourself? Marshall said in an interview that I read that it's very important to have like a password to bring yourself back
mm-hmm.
when you forget to focus, you know, the consciousness that you want to come from.
Mm-hmm.
And when you first mentioned that, I thought, oh, I don't have one. I don't have a password. I need one. And the word that came to mind was beloved. It actually comes from an experience I talked about in your joy class,
yeah.
which actually came out of that joy class, and I thought, well, that's perfect, because not only am I the beloved, but every one of us, the whole universe, is the beloved. That word can bring me back instantly to that place of enough, plenty, the knowledge that our needs, it's not that they need to be met, it's that they are met.
Mary Kay, would you share with them your story about the beloved? Because it was so moving to me.
Oh, sure. All of my life, and this goes partly with the Pollyanna thing, but all of my life, when I was young, I was very religious and very much in love with God. Since I was about 11 years old, saw myself as the lover. You know, when Rumi talks about the lover, I know what he's talking about. And Rilke's love poetry I had always been very attracted to. So this was the relationship that I saw. Even when I didn't really believe in God per se, I could not get away from that lover mentality. So when we were talking about joy and what keeps us from the experience of joy, one of the things that I learned in Kathleen's class was how important it is to welcome all the emotions. She read a poem called This Human Being is a Guest House, in which Rumi talks about welcoming whoever comes, good things, bad things. You just never know who's going to show up today, but you welcome them all. And I learned to call back and welcome back what I call my orphan emotions. I realized fairly recently in the past year or so that, you know, of the major emotions, mad, sad, bad, glad, and afraid, that the only one that's really okay in the culture that I grew up in is glad. It's okay to be glad, but if we have any of the others, if we're mad, if we're sad, if we're frightened, we want to change that or get away from it as soon as possible. So as I began to call back all of the feelings and welcome them all, my joy started reappearing. So one night I was doing a little meditation exercise for chasing the beloved. And all of a sudden, the one I was chasing stopped and turned. And I realized that I was the beloved. And that just, you know, that was one of those moments of a true paradigm shift. I realized that I had nothing to worry about, that everything was all right and everything would be granted. I thought I could ask for the universe in this moment and it would be given to me because I am the beloved. And I did, in fact, say a prayer for Baghdad in that moment with absolute certainty that it would be healed. And so that was the sort of experience that I found NVC facilitates. And so beloved is my reminder. Because, you know, that wasn't about me, this person. This was about all of us. So that's the story.
Do you want to hear any reactions to that before we move on?
Well, I can if there is one.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still drinking it in.
I'm aware of how far from that I am. That's a rather profound paradigm shift.
I'm so touched by that sense of mutuality and that the giving and the receiving all become blended together, because I do think of interdependence as me giving to other people. And so it's a reminder there's a whole new level of delight when the giving and receiving is all blurred. And it's happened simultaneously for everyone.
And you know, it's just a fact. You are the beloved. You are the beloved.
Yeah, I'm starting to get that.
Well, it's just, I mean, I know this. It's not, I mean, there's no question in my mind, you know, and I can tell you this.
Yeah.
I will tell you this with absolute certainty.
Mary Kay, I'm wishing you
were
sitting
here. It's not a problem.
I'm wishing you were sitting here so I could see your face telling me with such certainty. I wish I had you right here.
Oh. Well, you do. You do. You do. That's great. And I love the password, you know, idea. That's how do we get back to this consciousness when, oh, okay, it feels good. I know it on my spiritual level, my intellectual level, and it's sinking in a little deeper now. But, you know, I'm sure in 30 minutes it's going to be gone. And that password, something just that reminds you of the moment, the place of trust that you want to be in is great. I really thought, Mary Kay, when you were starting, that you said that your new password is going to be Pollyanna.
You've got a bad rap, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I have one more quote that this reminds me of, because this is that beloved, that place of sitting that you were in, reminds me of, you know, how does this consciousness manifest? Like, how do we know when we're coming from that consciousness? And the only translation I have for it is presence. It just shows up in our presence. There's something about my inner spaciousness and my inner world of presence, and there's something about the way I'm present to other people that there aren't any words for this consciousness, but that's, for me, the best way I can describe how it shows up, and I have a sense of when I'm in it. And so in the book Presence, the four authors put together this quote that I really love. We've come to believe that the core capacity needed to access the field of the future is presence. We first thought of presence as being fully conscious and aware in the present moment. Then we began to appreciate presence as deep listening, of being open beyond one's preconceptions and historical ways of making sense. We came to see the importance of letting go of old identities and the need to control, and as Salk said, making choices to serve the evolution of life. Ultimately, we came to see all these aspects of presence as leading to a state of letting come, of consciously participating in a larger field for change. And when this happens, the field shifts, and the forces shaping a situation can move from recreating the past to manifesting or realizing an emerging future. I love that there's a movement of energy in that quote for me, that being present has something to do with creation, that how I am in this moment in time and all the layers underneath it, the deep listening, the letting go of old identities, the letting come of what is, there's a movement toward actually creating the future. And by bringing in this consciousness, we bring in a future that the consciousness allows. I have one quick exercise that I think I'd just as soon throw out as kind of a homework opportunity if you're interested. And that is trying to let our imagination go to that place of what if the world really were like this and interdependent. So the first step is to think of a situation where you're currently under the impression that you're really separate from someone. You know, there's somebody there that we are not even of the same species, let alone on the same planet. You know that feeling, right? And the second step would be to imagine all the ways that you really are interdependent. And it could be that you share common friends, or you're part of the same community, or you're both working toward a common vision. Maybe you're part of the same family. Maybe this person, a group of people, grow your food for you, or maybe you provide a service to them. But just kind of list all of the ways that you really do see that you are interdependent, that somehow your paths are crossing in some way. And then the third step would be to imagine how you would act, speak, or even internally hold your relationship with that person if you knew that your safety and well-being was considered in a way that was inseparable. If you absolutely knew that, and what changes would you see then? And would those changes serve you and the other person? And this is just all imagination at this point. Just pretend like you know you are so connected, and there's nothing you could do to change that connection. And imagine how you might be acting or speaking differently from that place. And then the fourth step would be to check in and see if there's any unmet needs that are preventing you from making those changes. Like, what's stopping you from acting that way right now? Give a little empathy to those. Just really check in with them and see how they're protecting you from something, or they're serving you in some way. And then the last step would be to find out what requests can you make of yourself in this moment that arises from this new awareness, this new place of imagining. And just see if there's any requests that come up, just naturally, really authentic requests, not out of any demand energy or should or have to, but authentic requests. And I would be really curious to hear what comes up from the exercise, if anything, or you'll hear about that next week. Then I would love to hear from each of you, you know, how this class was or wasn't helpful, any particular ahas that came up, or things that are burning to beg for, you know, to go into next time.
I got reminded of how to get back to the place I need to be in when I'm trying to make this kind of connection with NBC.
I'm very grateful to you, Kathleen, and also to Mary Kay and Angana for their sharings. So far in the workshops that I've done, we haven't touched on this deep, profound sense of interconnectedness. And I'm really looking forward to this homework exercise, because that really seems to me something that is going to hold great value for me. Mm. If I imagine that inseparability between the person that I'm working with to accommodate needs, I could only then want their needs to be met in the same way that I want my own to be met.
Mm-hmm. Again, you know, a lot of corroboration of things that either I already feel, or there's an insight that's half formed, and so a lot of these things that have come up in our conversation today have kind of helped solidify some ideas. And say, oh, that's what it is. And I'm intrigued by the fact that there are people who have already gone ahead and written a book about presence, because in the course of other telecourses I've done, and looking back on different NBC trainings and things, that this idea of presence is really key. And so I just love the fact that we're exploring that more and that there is, in fact, a whole book that explores it. It's been a wonderful, wonderful class.
Mm. Great. There are actually many books that come from different ways of exploring presence. The one I'm reading is really focused on the organizational, you know, global organizational change and people working in that. It's really kind of business-oriented, but so connected to nothing can shift on organizational level until we do these profound inner transformational shifts within ourselves. Mm. So it's a lovely combination between the two if you're interested on that. And something that, Kathy, you said on your checkout triggered another thought that I'm playing with that goes back to the homework, is if I want to go back to the quantum physics that if a particle spins in one direction, simultaneously whatever particle it was connected to will shift its direction to match.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm assuming that that is happening between myself and other people, then I often wonder if they've shifted their spin. They've obviously shifted their spin in one direction. If I'm just automatically responding to that and therefore I'm spinning through painful stories and suffering about all these things I don't know that I think they're doing. And I'm wondering if there's a point of choice where, since it's interrelated and we seem to be connected, where I can choose to go into this other consciousness and when my spin shifts, if it also will shift it for the other person. So I just throw that out is at what point that we choose to come from a consciousness based on interdependence, how that affects others around us. I don't know.
And
I can only guess it does. Go ahead.
Yeah. I actually can see today in interactions with a friend of mine, and we've really been struggling, really, really, really been struggling lately, and both just butting heads, trying to each be heard and trying to each get our needs met and trying to each be understood, and nobody's been giving an inch. And finally, something in me shifted, and I asked if they would be willing to go to an NVC mediation with not having an agenda of who we would be on the other side, but just so that we could each feel heard and understood and not continuing to do damage. And and as I shifted, the response coming back was entirely different than it has been for the past couple of weeks. Suddenly the response was open, and they don't even know what NVC is, but the concept of it and my willingness to sort of throw myself out there. So my spin changed the spin that happened in response, and my spin before got me back the same spin.
I like that.
Yeah. And as you're describing it, what I'm seeing is, in my mind, is this flock of birds. You don't know how they all know it's time to change direction, except they all keep changing direction at the same time.
Which it's maybe goes to that idea that maybe there's just a place of presence that gets us so deep that we just become part of that future and part of that it's time to shift and we just know it.
Right.
So, wow. Well, I, in my checkout, just have thoroughly enjoyed this class, and I'm very grateful to all of you. I've learned so much, and I'm eager to continue exploring. It's so rich for me. So thank you. I'm really grateful.